Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, we are celebrating Tucson's birthday. It's Wednesday, the 20th of August, 2025. When I say birthday, of course, people lived in this area for thousands of years, but we're celebrating the 250th anniversary of the European founding of the Presidio of Tucson. But again, people have been living at the banks, along the banks of the Santa Cruz for thousands of years.
And happy birthday, Tucson. So is the establishment of the Presidio is basically the start date for
for
Tucson.
The European kind of settlement here in southern Arizona. Very humid today, no rain. I didn't see anything that looked remotely like kind of rain clouds.
The National Weather Service is optimistically hoping that we might get some showers and thunderstorms in the area.
Yeah.
This afternoon and evening, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we'll get it here in the metro, so
no.
We'll see.
We are in the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio, part of the Bustos Media Center. Very proud of our five radio stations in one location. This one is 1030 KVOI, Tucson's Voice, for trusted live news and talk. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management, once a month we bring in one of our two dozen contributors to this program, Dr. Jeff Silvertooth. He's our contributor on agriculture and sustainability and water and other things like that. Professor and extension specialist in agronomy and soil science at the University of Arizona Department of Environmental Science. Jeff served on and has served on the University of Arizona faculty and worked statewide here since 1987. He beat me by 1 year. When I returned to Tucson, of course, was here going to college in the 60s. Professor Silvertooth has been recognized as a fellow for both the American Society of Agronomy and Soil Science Society of America. Jeff, how are you?
I'm fine, Bill. Thank you. How are you doing?
Doing well, and it's not just Tucson and Arizona suffering, 25 years of drought, five straight years of drought, and the entire country of Iran is basically running dry. The taps are nearly empty.
What's happening there, what's happening here is consistent with a lot of parts of the world right now. In fact, it's kind of interesting. It's very interesting, in fact. Dr. Jay Famoletti, who is a professor of hydrology up at Arizona State University, he and his group have been doing some good work putting out some information with an assessment. Regionally, they've done some on the lower Colorado River basin, a whole watershed for the lower Colorado River, looking at surface and groundwater depletion. And what they've been able to show here in our region is that our surface water has been depleted quite substantially over the past 25 years as a function of this drought that you mentioned, you know, serious drought, the worst drought, mega drought that geologists say that's occurred since in 1,200 years. And so the surface waters have depleted, and that's turned a lot of our folks, cities, and agriculture and industry to back to groundwater, and those groundwater resources are being seriously depleted. So Famoletti and his group have been able to document that. They've also done some global studies, and some recent papers that just came out have shown that what's happening in Iran, what's happening here in the Western United States, is consistent with a lot of parts of the world. They're facing the same problems that we are, and particularly in these arid and semi-arid regions, I think it's most accentuated, where you have limited water resources to begin with, almost half the global population, intensive agriculture in these areas to support the global population, and these water resources are essential. And as the surface water resources have declined due to climate change, which has happened and it continues to happen, they're increasing aridification in these areas.
How can you ignore climate change when you see what's going on in Europe and places like Iran and up in Canada now? Every summer we're seeing the mega forest fires, the horrible air quality in the upper Midwest where I grew up. Used to be in the summer we'd enjoy summer up at the cottage in Wisconsin. Now the skies are filled with smoke. How do you ignore it, Jeff Silvertooth?
Well, I think one way of looking at that is to say we can look at the facts, and facts may be facts, but what we commonly find is perceptions become people's reality. And what forms a person's perception is might not be that they're actually really looking at the facts, that they're listening or studying or hearing or following something else. And sometimes it's a matter of belief. I think when it comes to, you know, I work in science, and so that's one of the nice things I like about science. There's some irrefutable laws of the universe that that translate into the world around us. And when you follow the science and follow a scientific process to study some of this, it becomes, to me, irrefutable. And sometimes there's a matter of a probability with regard to what we're seeing in terms of natural phenomena or a phenomenon in the natural world. And, you know, that's one way of looking at it, is basically factual, statistical, looking at it in a scientific way. Other folks look at it, I think, in the way they feel and what they hear and how they perceive things. And we have these differences in opinions. But to me, it's not a matter of opinion or belief. These are things that are happening. And what I think right now, the good evidence, like you mentioned, the climate change issues, we have 25 years of living it and seeing it. And what we're seeing is a serious reduction, over 16%, almost 20% reduction in the flow of the Colorado River is a good example. Mm-hmm. That's real. Mm-hmm. Colorado River is being reduced in its flow. The Lake Mead levels have gone down because we're basically, our use and demand is exceeding what's coming down that river. So we have to deal with those facts of reality. We can't say, no, the dam is really full. That's when it's not. We have to deal with the facts. So that's not just our problem. And well, you pointed out the problem with the Iranians. They're dealing with it as well. Now, the benefit that we have, I think, is that we have the benefit of understanding this a little better. We have a system. This is a real test of our governance. Really, it is. In terms of how are we going to adjust our laws, or rules, regulations, and how do we manage these resources? And Arizona is a great example where you look at groundwater resources being depleted as we turn more increasingly to those as surface water resources have declined. And we're seeing the pressures on our groundwater resources such that if we continue living like we're living, we're going to run it out.
Yes, I have that research in front of me that you referenced from that group up at ASU, and they say that this groundwater, millions of acres of feet in the aquifers underground, deposited tens of thousands of years ago, and we are burning through it like there's no tomorrow.
That's true. That's true. And some folks don't want to recognize that reality, but it is a fact. And that can be very well documented by several different directions. Familetti and his group have done an excellent job of documenting that and making that aware to us in a quantitative sense. But the question comes back to us, now what do we do about it? And right now in this state, as we've discussed before, but there's been a lot of efforts in the past couple of years to pass laws and update our laws for most of the state, which is unregulated. Mm-hmm. The central part of this Arizona, what we call the urban corridors, Pima County, Pinal, Maricopa, and up into Yavapai and a couple other spots, have what we call AMA active management areas that were directed into place through the 1980 Groundwater Management Act. And what those AMAs have done is have put in some regulations, restrictions with regard to groundwater use to try to preserve those resources. Now, outside of those counties, most of the rest of the state is still open to 19th century water law, which basically says if you own some land, you can drill a well, you can pump all the water you want. And there's no restraints, no restrictions to that. So what we need to do, and it comes back to this consumptive pattern that we're experiencing, is to conserve these resources. We're going to have to change some of these laws and update our laws, our regulations, so that we can conserve, still live and function, but try to conserve these resources for the future. So that's really where we are today, and we really turn to our legislature to do that. This last year, the governor imposed another AMA on part of Cochise County. At Cochise County, part of it, the Douglas AMA, came into place by an election a few years ago. The people voted it in for the Douglas Basin. The Sulphur Springs Basin, they call it the Wilcox Basin, that was just imposed by the governor of the Department of Water Resources, basically as a function, Bill, of our legislature's inability to act in the past several years with the increasing demands from the folks that are living down there to get something done. So that's what we're facing right now across this state and across the region, and other parts of the world are dealing with it as well. I think we can do it if we just have the political will and use the facts and the information available to us to do it well.
And the farm community points out that alfalfa growth, which uses a lot of water, as you know, Jeff, contributes hundreds of millions of dollars to the Arizona economy.
Well, this is another thing. It's another one of these facts versus perception issues in terms of where our water goes into agriculture and where these agricultural crops grow. you know, the thing is, we're globally speaking, we're in a global market with regard to lots of our goods and services, the clothes that we wear, cars we buy, equipment, electronics, et cetera. Same is true with agriculture. We're in a global exchange with regard to agricultural products, have been for many decades. The United States has oftentimes boasted, we feed the world. And the only way we can do that is through exportation of our agricultural crops. Alfalfa has been villainized in this state to a large extent because, well, number one, we grow it and we don't eat it. Number two, we grow it and it takes a lot of water. Number three, sometimes it's grown and shipped overseas. Well, all three points, we're the beneficiaries of every one of those points. To grow any plant or have any living thing, it takes water. And the more you produce of that product or entity, the more water it takes. Alfalfa goes to feed animals here in Arizona that provide dairy products for us primarily and some meat products, but primarily dairy. Alfalfa is also exported to other parts of the country. The United States exports about 20% of our total agricultural products. Last year, as a matter of fact, it's interesting to note, the United States became a net importer for the first time. And they were projected to be a larger net importer of agricultural products in the next year. You know, I could expand upon that, upon what that means to Arizona, if you like. But what we're looking at right now nationally is the fact that we are in an exchange with agricultural goods and products. Arizonans are the beneficiaries. Arizona citizens, 7.6 million Arizonans, are the beneficiaries of what we export out and what we bring in back into the state through agricultural exchange of products.
All right, hold your thought there. Let's pick up on this after the break. It's Buckmaster Show, midweek edition. Jeff Silvertooth is with us, our lead guest, coming up at 12:30. Travel Watch with Ryan Hansen of Bon Voyage Travel. We'll be right back.
Congratulations to KVOI's own Hall of Fame broadcaster, Bill Buckmaster, who's been nominated as Best Radio Host in the Tucson Weekly's annual Best Of competition. To vote, just go to TucsonWeekly.com. Voting ends August 28th. So cast your vote today and help Bill Buckmaster win Best Radio Host. And catch The Buckmaster Show every weekday at noon on 1030 The Voice, Tucson's only live local news and talk. Vero Amore, where every certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore is located in the lovely Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell. Also, check out the full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamorepizza.com. The Regional Transportation Authority invests over $100 million annually in transportation improvements in the greater Tucson region based on public input. The RTA and its regional partners deliver roadway, transit, safety, pedestrian, bicycle, environmental, and other needed improvements to meet the demands of transportation network users over a 20-year period. Learn more about the economic and quality of life benefits of the RTA's 2006 voter-approved plan and flexible funding at rtamobility.com.
Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, our midweek edition, our segment one and two guests today, Dr. Jeff Silvertooth. We're always honored to bring Professor Silvertooth onto the program at least once a month. He is our contributor on agriculture and sustainability and water and other things, a professor and extension specialist in agronomy and soil science at the University of Arizona Department of Environmental Science. We're talking a little bit about alfalfa and that, how big a deal that is, really how big a deal agriculture is to Arizona. And I was just saying that saw an article, Jeff Silvertooth, half of farmers in this country are over retirement age. And the author of this piece in USA Today is wondering if the whole food system may be at risk in this country.
Yeah, that's been a trend that's been going on for about the past 25, 30 years. You know, it's interesting. I was born in 1953, and the average age of the farmer has been tracking along with my age for about the past 25, 30 years. So it means my generation has been moving along as we've been aging, and some of them are not being replaced by their family members. What's happening, Bill, too, is interesting. We talked about facts and perceptions. People talk about big commercial agriculture, industrial agriculture, it's evil. Arizona and across the nation, 98% of the farms that you would claim as, you'd like label as commercial, industrial farmer, family-owned.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is this phenomenon you're talking about, people aren't going into this business. We've been seeing increasing urbanization in this country over the past 70 years in my lifetime, being born in 53, post-World War II. Most people have been, the rapid change from the rural areas, movement from the rural areas to urban areas has been huge all over the country, all over the world, particularly in the United States. People don't want to stay in those rural communities. Families that have children that are farming oftentimes don't want to stay. They go to college or go someplace else for other opportunities.
They don't want to come home and work on the ranch or
farm. And a lot of Americans just don't want to go out and do that work.
No.
You know, in fact, the matter is, it kind of gets into our immigration issues. Another fact that people don't want to accept, they don't see it, I guess. And I see it every day in my work in agriculture. So much of our agricultural labor force is coming from Mexico.
It's migrant dependent.
It's huge. We couldn't operate without it. I just had this conversation with some folks the other day, and the fact of the matter is, Americans just won't go out and do that.
No, they will not.
You know, and farmers that I know have tried to hire them, tried to get them to, you know, entice them into this work, and they want more money. They want more this and that, and it's hard, long days, and it's dirty. And it's when they're living in rural areas, and they just don't like it. So farmers are having a hard time getting themselves replaced. The good news is this, and I've seen it at the university over my past almost 40 years at the university, and working with students and then classes. Used to be 20, 30 years ago, a lot of the students coming into agriculture had experience in agriculture.
Uh-huh.
Directly with agriculture. Mm. And not just visiting grandpa's farm. It was the real deal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what we see is most of the students coming into agriculture who are interested in agriculture are coming out of urban environments.
Mm-hmm.
That's our future.
Mm-hmm.
And what our future includes, and this is why I think the university, of course, I have a bias here, but we have a functional, important step in this functional process of transitioning folks from an urban background into a farming operation, which you just don't pull some cat off the street to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to have some expertise, some understanding, but you also, that's an art, there's a practice, a lot of functionality that goes along with it. But those folks are our future. And the university, we can give them an education, but then getting them some experience in the field, the folks in the agriculture community recognize that. As a matter of fact, you know, I was the Associate Dean and Director for Extension for 10 years here at the U of A. And one of the last things I was able to do was in that position about 4 or 5 years ago was secure some funding from the state legislature to look at to work and help develop the agricultural workforce to address this problem that you've described.
Mm-hmm.
Farmers in the state recognize that. They worked with the legislature. We were able to get some funding to help support support that effort. Primarily what it would do, Bill, is give folks with an educational background a chance for an internship, mm-hmm. a chance to go out into the field. Because at the end of the day, you have to get out in the field. You have to want to go do this mm-hmm. stuff. And it's getting increasingly difficult to find people to do that, but they're there. Mm-hmm. But they're coming out of urban environments, so the learning curve is steep. Mm-hmm. But they've got to want, if they want to do it, they can do it. And I've seen it happen.
Coming out of an urban environment, it intrigues me why they would be interested in agriculture.
Well, you know, that's a good point. I think a lot of people are interested in they start thinking about where does our food come from?
Right.
And a lot of folks are just, they like, you know, tangible things. A lot of us working in agriculture or applied science, we like something tangible. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of folks in science work completely in the abstract. Mm-hmm. But a lot of us in agriculture and applied sciences like taking science, and we like seeing it happen in the real world, hands-on. Mm-hmm. Something, you know, seeing plants grow, put a seed in the ground and produce a plant. It's a miracle. Mm-hmm. Some folks get fascinated by that, and it can happen in simple things like in a garden, or in a, you know, plant experiment. Mm-hmm. I hate to say it, but I know a lot of folks my age, you know, professionals got into the business, and you'd sit down and visit with them, have a beer or something, and I'll say, how'd you get into this business? And they grew up in Chicago or right. Los Angeles, right. Baltimore. And they started growing pot when they were kids. And they got interested in planting a seed, growing a plant, and that whole idea of genetics or soil chemistry, and they got interested.
So marijuana growing was their avenue to agriculture.
Yeah, you talk about it. It's one of those channeling mm-hmm. drugs. I guess it channeled a lot of people into a profession that's turned out to be beneficial. So, but it can happen in a garden. It can happen just in a flower pot. Just people get interested in that, and it kind of opens up an enlightenment for them. They start studying that, and boom, off they go. I think it happens as simply as that sometimes.
Going back to our lead topic, that Arizona, Nevada, and I guess Mexico will again have to live with less water from the Colorado River. This is one more year, and it's going to be a year-to-year thing, but we're still waiting for a federal program to decide what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's a big topic right
it
now.
It is.
Yeah, the Colorado River is, like I say earlier, it's been reduced in its flow, you know, 16 to 20% in the past 25 years. We've had to go through these reductions through the 2007 interim guidelines that were mm-hmm. imposed to deal with the drought back in the early part of this century, revised several times, most recently in the 2019 drought contingency plan that was ratified by the lower basin states. What that does, it ties this in with the Bureau of Reclamation and Department of Interior saying when the levels in the water at Lake Mead hit certain critical points that we go into certain tier level reductions. We're right now, Arizona, we're in tier level one because mm-hmm. we've gone below 1,075 feet above sea level with the water level at the face of Lake Mead. It's projected right now that the Bureau always looks ahead in August and does a forecast to say what the levels in Lake Mead will be at the end of the calendar year.
Right.
And then they impose these tier reductions based on that. We're projected to go into tier two reductions this next year, which will mean for Arizona a 592,000 acre foot reduction in our 2.8 million acre foot allocation.
Which is about 18%
right, exactly.
of the total. Arizona's total Colorado River allotment. That's a lot, Joe.
Yeah, pushing 20%.
I mean,
the thing that's hot right now is these guidelines that I just mentioned, they all expire mm-hmm. in 2026.
Then what happens?
Well, so the basin states, upper basin, which are the states above Lee's Ferry, the lower basin states, which are Arizona, California, Nevada, and Mexico gets included in that mix as well, are trying to work with the upper basin states to negotiate an agreement for conservation plans that will carry forward after 2026. There's been a huge amount of conflict between upper basin and lower basin. Lower basin states are pretty much on board together. Upper basin states are on board together, but the two can't see eye to eye.
Can't get
and so that's where the critical issue is right now, is to work through these negotiations, get new guidelines in place. And they're going to have to be stringent because projections also have shown, as you're indicating, that these conservation guidelines we have now might not be enough. Mm-hmm. They're not enough.
Mm-hmm. What makes you wonder, doesn't it, Jeff Silvertooth, about our sustainability and the future here?
Well, it comes back again to our systems of governance. That's a great example. Mm-hmm. We talk about groundwater laws. That's a state-level regulation.
Right.
We need legislative action to help us work through that and establish a conservation plan that works. At the federal level, that's exactly what's happening on this Colorado River. But it has to be a federal level. Now, the feds have the authority to step in and say, if basin states can't work it out, then we will decide for you. No one wants that to happen. Mm-hmm. So it's really incumbent again upon these basin states, the delegation teams appointed by the governors in each state, to go forward and operate these negotiations in good faith with in a productive way. Our Department of Water Resource Director, Mr. Tom Buchaski, leads the effort for the state of Arizona. Mr. J.B. Hamby, who is the commissioner for the Colorado River for the state of California, is representing the governor and the state of California, leading that delegation. And they are the two principals of this lower basin. And then, of course, John, Elswanger, from Nevada. Mm-hmm. Nevada, Las Vegas, they're dependent on the Colorado River as well in Clark County. But there's principally Arizona and California, and the Mexicans fit into that as well.
All right, Jeff Silvertooth, we will catch up with you the day after Labor Day. So we'll see you actually in a couple of weeks. But it's really serious. I've been in town 37 years. I've never seen a summer rainy season like this. We've had basically up at our house two maybe moderate rains,
right?
Nothing like you would normally see in the monsoon.
Well, like you say, most of us that have been here, I've been here, I've got my 39th season here right now. Mm-hmm. Comment on this. It used to be its patterns were different. The patterns
were
different now. Well, the climate has changed. The climate is changing. That's one of those things we have to face. And I guess it's c'est la vie, but we have to deal with it.
All right, Jeff Silvertooth, always a pleasure. We'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate it.
All right, take a break right here. Travel Talk with Ryan Hansen of Bon Voyage Travel. That's coming up after the mid-show break.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane in North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, greenthingsaz.com, their sister business, zocalovillage.com, open daily, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River. We love Green Things. all the green things are waiting for the summer rains, which have been very spotty, as everybody knows, here in Tucson. Time for our insider travel talk on the Buckmaster Show with our travel contributor, Ryan Hansen, President and Chief Operating Officer of Bon Voyage Travel, Arizona's premier travel agency since 1976. Bon Voyage travel experts are ready right now to create your trip of a lifetime. There are three Southern Arizona Bon Voyage offices, River and Campbell, Green Valley, and Oro Valley, bvtravel.com, the first stop in making your travel dreams come true. Let's welcome now Ryan Hansen, who's had a very busy summer, and we're going to hear about Rhino's summer vacation family trip over to Greece and Italy a little bit later in our talk, but great to have you back, Ryan.
It is good to be back. Yeah, I have been on the road, and it's interesting, Bill, when I talk to people, friends of mine or other colleagues outside of the travel industry, they ask me, oh, hey, are you going anywhere fun? Well, when you're in the business of travel, pretty much the answer is yes. We go to fun places in our industry. We're not going to the Tulsa Airport Marriott for a retreat or a business meeting. No offense to Tulsa nor the airport Marriotts that do a fine job at what they do. But yes, we are in great destinations. We'll talk about my trip, like you said, on the other side of the break. But it is good to be back with you, Bill, on the air, talking travel, something we both love.
Well, the TSA is now looking to try to make their operation more efficient at our airports and really the whole security sector of the business, of the travel industry. Ryan Hansen is kind of undergoing what could be a facelift. I wonder if we could kind of touch on some of that.
I think it makes a lot of sense, Bill, to talk about it, because for the most part, when you travel, and especially if you're using a flight to get you to these great places, unfortunately, your airport or airplane experience, more often than not, is the worst part of the trip.
Yeah.
And can be exacerbated by your security check-ins, your check-ins at the front desk. And it is good to hear. It is very much needed in regards to keeping up to date with the security protocols around the world. And so we are happy to report some of these things. And I thought it would be good for us to chat about TSA is potentially looking to privatize some of their innovation. And that's smart to get, as we both know, sometimes when you rely on the government to innovate and to create new technology to keep up with everything, it's just a bogged down, slow process.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes privatizing these things to incorporate AI-driven threat detection and remote screening and optimizing workforce capabilities through automation, utilizing robotics for passenger and baggage screening, things like that require an influx of capital, require less bureaucracy sometimes to get things moving down the line. And we're happy to hear that TSA is working closely with the federal government to try to find the right ways to innovate, keeping security at the forefront, right? Everything we talk about, you and I, we want expedited screening, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you what we want more is safe flights,
right?
Secured airports, right? We want that more than I'll take an extra 10 minutes at the security checkpoint to make sure that my flight is safe and secure, just as you would any reasonable person would. But it's the unforced errors that happen at TSA that those of us travelers that do fly a lot get bogged down with.
Ryan Hansen, talk a little bit about some of these changes. A new program might be dedicated to security lanes for families.
Yeah, this is a really important and why I think it's an important evolution with TSA is social media has created a kind of a firestorm of bad situations for families as they travel, either on planes where the children are unable to sit with their parents because of the way the flight was booked, and trying to get families together on planes is an important thing. Well, the Department of Homeland Security is looking at enhancing and encouraging families to travel by creating a new program called Families on the Fly, and it just launched last month. And what they're trying to do with this program is mitigate those unique challenges that families face when they travel, really with minors and with little ones, that you have more bulky items, you have strollers and diaper bags and bottles and things like that that just kind of bog down the normal security lines, is creating family-friendly traffic lines for you at security. So really trying to not make it be a VIP experience. I don't think families are looking for that, but just a little bit more understanding from fellow travelers and the TSA agents themselves that they're more geared towards helping families through that process so that you are still keeping the security protocols where they need to be, but also making it a little bit more friendly for a family member. And one of the good evolution, and you and I both have TSA PreCheck that can help expedite those of us independent travelers. Well, the current rule previous to this new program was that children 12 and under could accompany their parent through the TSA PreCheck line, even if they weren't identified as TSA pre on their boarding pass. They've extended that now to minors 17 and under that are traveling with their parents. So to try to make that where if you have TSA pre as an adult, your kids are traveling with you, you can still get those privileges of what a TSA PreCheck line can do. So making some nice improvements.
I want to talk a little bit about this one, and I've had personal experience with this one, whether it's coming back into the country from Miami, Dallas, Seattle. This would be a one-stop security program. Folks who've traveled internationally know that when after you've cleared customs, in this country, you then have to go through domestic screening. So this would eliminate part of that, which really bogs things down.
Yeah, you and I know when those you take that long-haul flight over the Atlantic Ocean and you're coming back into any of those major gateways, having to collect your bags and then start all over again at the very end of the security line. If you have a tight connection, maybe you're delayed. Maybe you don't have a tight connection. It just creates more frustration and angst as a traveler. And this new program that's being launched by two airlines right now, American and Delta, are launching kind of a pilot program, as you alluded to, called One Stop Security. And you do have to fly from London to one of two airports, either Dallas-Fort Worth or Atlanta. And so those gateways are running a pilot program because London security at those airports with those airlines align directly with the United States protocols, with technology enhancements and protocol cross-utilization across these bureaus. They've been able to determine same procedures, why are we rescreening people if they've already done the same exact procedures? Not every gateway in Europe has the technology that the United States requires, so that's why they mandate it now at all these other gateways that you have to recheck your bags and go through a second security screening. We're really hopeful that this reduction in friction will catch on and other airports and airlines globally will pick up their technology enhancements and align their security protocols with where the United States is, because we still want a rigorous threat assessment at your last point of departure, right? Foreign airports that are interested in aligning, that's a big thing. So this is a more kind of government bureaucracy that we're talking about here, Bill, but it really does impact the traveler. And as you mentioned, and I experienced it coming back through Chicago on our summer trip that we'll touch more deeply on the fun parts of that on the other side of the break. But coming back in, it is a hassle when you come back in. So making that a little bit more streamlined could really help travelers.
Yeah, and just a little more of, and we will be talking about your very fun travel family vacation to Europe. Overall, how would you say the TSA experience was for the Hansen family?
The Hansen family of four had no problems. We were fortunate. We had no delays, except we did have a cancellation of a flight in Chicago, so we had to spend the night in Chicago coming back into the United States. But from a TSA standpoint, we all were fortunate, had TSA PreCheck. We're also a family that utilizes Global Entry, which I would highly recommend for those travelers traveling internationally. It's $100. It's a five-year program that you have, so it's really $20 a year if you think about that. So if you fly at least once a year internationally, into one of those major gateways. Coming into Chicago O'Hare, trust me, there was multiple flights and a very long, winding line coming back through customs for anyone not having global entry. And so that expedited our arrival into Chicago. So we didn't have any issues with that, but I could definitely see if you had a tight connection or some of these other enhancements would just make that experience that much better and more fluid for us.
All right, I want to hear about the Hanson vacation after the break. It's Travel Talk with
Ryan. Let's get to some fun stuff, Bill. Come on.
All right, we're going to get to the fun stuff. Travel Talk with Ryan Hanson continues right after this quick message.
Congratulations to KVOI's own Hall of Fame broadcaster Bill Buckmaster, who's been nominated as Best Radio Host in the Tucson Weekly's annual Best Of competition. To vote, just go to TucsonWeekly.com. Voting ends August 28th. So cast your vote today and help Bill Buckmaster win Best Radio Host. And catch The Buckmaster Show every weekday at noon on 1030 The Voice, Tucson's only live local news and talk. Located in the heart of Arizona wine country, about an hour south of Metro Tucson, Flying Leap Estate Vineyards Winery and Distillery Facilities are one of the most beautiful wine venues in the southwestern United States. Come relax and unwind at our spacious property and learn about Arizona grape viticulture and winemaking from our team of trained sommeliers and discover the intricacies of the art of distillation. Learn more at flyingleapvineyards.com. The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax through June 2026. The funding has led to a $1.6 billion investment in regional transportation improvements over the past two decades to improve your quality of life. The RTA is working on a final draft of a new regional transportation plan for future voter consideration. The $2.46 billion draft plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, environmental, and other needed improvements. Learn more at rtanext.com.
This is your captain speaking. Thank you for flying with Tucson International Airport, where you can avoid the hassles, long lines, and the expensive parking of the Phoenix Airport. Skip the traffic, breeze through security, and park with ease, all while supporting your community. Every flight from TUS brings more destinations and better connections right here to Tucson. So next time you're planning a getaway, remember, fly easy, fly local, fly TUS. This is your captain signing off. We're cleared for takeoff.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studios. It's 80 degrees over in Silver City. It's always at least 10 degrees cooler. So it is certainly worth your while to take that three-hour drive east of Tucson. Start your planning now. Visit southwestnewmexico.org. You'll have a terrific time over in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. And it will be cooler. The elevation's 5 to 7,000 feet, so you'll cool off over there really beautiful area of the Land of Enchantment. Continuing now with part two of our conversation on Travel Talk with Ryan Hansen, President and Chief Operating Officer of Bon Voyage Travel. It's great to be talking travel again with Ryan. Boy, what a busy July you had with that family vacation to Rome, to Venice, then Greece. And I guess the trip went very well.
Oh, how could it not, Bill, right? I mean, if you said, hey, 2 weeks and you get to those destinations plus more, right? We were in Pisa and Florence, and Athens was our primary stop in Greece, but we did get out to the Corinth Canal and got out into the Greek countryside. When you throw those cities out there and those experiences, how can you not expect a great trip? And it was, from the historical significance of those destinations to the people, the culture, and how can I not say the food? Italian food that we consumed was amazing. And it's interesting, though, Bill, as I was sharing with some people about our trip when it was coming up in July previous to our departure, many folks had heard, well, wait a minute, it is the year of the Jubilee.
Yeah.
And so, as we all know, millions of new passengers or new travelers and repeat travelers were going to be descending specifically on Rome this year, as every 25 years, the year of the Jubilee brings many Catholics and other Protestants to the Mecca, to the Vatican and St. Peter's Basilica. So they were concerned about the crowds. Was there going to be too many people? Was it going to be overrun? And I can overwhelmingly say it was not overrun. There was lots of great activity. It was bustling, don't get me wrong, as Rome typically is in the summertime. But our visits to all of the great stops, from the Colosseum to the Pantheon to which we would recommend this, one of our partners set up a private tour of the Vatican Museum and the Sistine Chapel. So try this one on for size, Bill. 20,000 visitors transit the Sistine Chapel on a daily basis, and our partners in Italy were able to arrange for a group that we were with that was less than 60 people after hours. So we went in after everything closed and had the place to ourselves, as you could say. So sitting in the Sistine Chapel, where you weren't ushered through, sometimes you feel like you're sheep being ushered through the gates and you got to hurry up and get to the next thing. Seeing the Sistine Chapel and being inside at night was something special.
How did all that come about? I know you've got connections, you should, being in the travel industry, but can your people at Bon Voyage make something like that happen for just the average traveler, Ryan Hansen?
Absolutely, right. Yeah, this isn't just because I'm the president of the company that they opened the doors just for me. We have a number of partners. The partner that we went with is called Tauk. T-A-U-C-K. It is a tour operator that runs escorted vacations and has been for the last 100 years. They're celebrating their 100th anniversary this year. So we were with a group of 28 people all through Italy, and they arranged everything for us and had special things like that after-hours Vatican tour. They set up a pizza cooking class when we were in Florence. We had the first tour in Venice of the Doge's Palace and the St. Mark's Basilica. So we were in there very early in the morning before the chaos ensued in Venice, which, as you know, Venice, very popular destination. So Tauk Tours was able to set that up for us. But we have a number of other partners if you wanted something more private, if you wanted just you and your small family to see some of these special places with a little bit of help, right? A little bit of escorting, making life a little simpler for you. That would be my number one recommendation of places like Italy, these very, very popular destinations that a lot of people want to go to. You need to utilize our resources and our connections to just make it a little simpler, remove some of those friction points along the way on some of these incredible places. And one of the places we had an extra special time was we had early hours access to the Acropolis when we were in Athens. And so we, the doors and the gates open to the Acropolis at 8 a.m. every morning in the summer. We met at 7:30, and our tour operator and our partner got us up with about 100 people up to the Acropolis. We were the first group up there. We departed at 7:30, and they didn't even open up the doors and the gates for everyone else to come up until 8 o'clock. So twofold, we got up there before the crowds, and we beat the heat. As we know, in the summertime in Athens, it was north of 100 degrees, but having some of these special extra things made it that much better for our family to experience.
And you were on this one. I have your itinerary in front of me. It's such a beautiful trip, and this exploring Rome by a golf cart. How did that work?
Right. I've told a number of people about that, and they said, "What?"
What?
Well, as we know, there is so much to see in Rome. And it is a walkable city, no doubt. There is public transportation that makes it very easy as well. But we decided to take a 3.5-hour tour of Rome by golf cart. And we were whizzing in and out of back alleys. We were able to maximize our time in the city because we wanted to get to as many things as possible. And so what it helped too is you had a little breeze going through the golf cart, and they were able to park us right next to Piazza Navona or Campo de Fiori, the big piazzas, and we could just zip right in, go check out the site, hop back out on the golf cart, and we were off to the Colosseum and then the Forum, and the hits just kept coming. And so it really was the most efficient way, but also kind of a fun way for all four of us to be on the same golf cart zipping in and out of the alleyways of Rome.
You mentioned food. How about the food? The street vendors, I see you had kind of a tour of the Athens street food. What was that like?
One of our favorite things to do as a family is not just partake in the food that we choose, but we look for food tours and look for the experts in given cities to find those hidden gems. And we found through one of our partners exactly what you said. We went into the historic Plaka district of Athens, which is the old town area, and we hooked up with a special guide who took us to five different destinations and five different restaurants that really centered around food you can hold in your hand. So you could buy it and walk down the street. So it was either souvlaki, which is kind of like a gyro with, they throw French fries in this thing, and you could have lamb or beef or a vegetarian version, all wrapped up in a pita. Or my favorite stop was the place that is the Lucamades, and that is their version of a donut hole. It's their version of Dunkin' Donuts, and my favorite bite that they had was dipped in honey, and the honey was just dripping off of this donut hole. And so to have a special guide take us through the Plaka, showcase these wonderful dishes, but then also give us the history behind the dishes, where it came from, how it's evolved through time and has taken on a new version, like when the Ottoman Empire had a very significant influence on Athens and the culture that created new food options from the East versus just the Roman Empire from the West. So learning about the food made that experience all the better.
How do our listeners find out more about this type of a trip, Brian Hansen?
Their best bet would be to go to our website, bvtravel.com, and on our website we have a section called Find an Advisor. And if you click on that, you can look at all the bios of our advisors and see the different specialty areas and destinations that they understand better than anybody else, and contact one of them directly from our website and set up a meeting and tell them exactly what you're looking for. I want to go to Spain. I want to go to Italy, and I would like to see history, culture, and food, and we can start this collaborative process of getting you exactly what you're looking for on your vacation, and maybe things you never even thought you could do. We have some of those insights, like cooking classes in Florence or the after-hours Vatican tour. Those types of things we can bring to your attention.
Well, you've had a great summer. We'll look forward to visiting with you next month. Thank you, Ryan Hansen.
Thanks, Bill.
BVTravel.com, the first stop in making your travel dreams come true. That's going to do it for the midweek edition of the Buckmaster Show. Tomorrow, our featured interview, The mayor, Rahina Romero, will be with me in studio. On behalf of Ryan Hansen, Tom, engineering and producing, Bill Buckmaster, wishing everybody well.